This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients.
So, Brie, I remember this one time I was in a bike race around Tucson, and I wasn't paying attention. We were riding down 4th Avenue, and there's railroad tracks, like streetcar tracks, and my bike's tire like went and wedged in to the railroad tracks,
no!
And I totally fell down and just like skinned my hands, everything. Ugh. I had nothing with me, nothing at all. And it's that times where you want a first aid product and you have nothing. And Active Skin Repair utilizes a molecule called hypochlorous acid. When applied to the skin, the molecule works by mimicking the natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. I've used it on my son's mosquito bites, and I wish I would have had it the time I totally scraped up my hands.
Oh, I hear you. Like whenever I go paddleboarding, kayaking, I'm always trying to find something that is like an all-in-one that I can take with me. And Active Skin Repair could be used like that. It can be used to treat cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. It's also safe and non-toxic, which makes it suitable for all skin types, all parts of the body, like eczema, and acne-prone skin, all of that.
With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients so safe and clean they can be used from the youngest member of the family to the oldest, you now have one simple solution for all of your family's skin health needs. Visit www.activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and to get 20% off your order. Use code NOGUILT. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast. I am your host, Joanne Crone, joined here by my terrific, fantabulous co-host, Brie Tucker.
Woo woo! Hello, hello, everybody. How are you? Yep. I like that.
Fantabulous. And Brie, we're back.
We missed you guys.
We did. We missed you all. And we have such a phenomenal season planned for you, filled with amazing guests and great topics. And welcome to everyone who joined us at the Happy Mom Summit.
I know. Oh my gosh. I would love to see how many of our podcast listeners were there at the summit with us.
Yeah, that was a fun time. If you did not know that Brie and I have pretty mad dancing skills, you got to see them at the summit. Like mad dancing skills, like skills that like put on full cringe with our kids' dancing skills.
I still argue that I am a good dancer.
You are a good dancer.
Well, no, we are. Yes. But yes, our kids are like, oh no, because we don't do the TikToks, right?
No. They're like, you do that in front of people
online? Yeah. We're like, yes. Totally.
We figure if we can dance like no one's watching, you can dance like no one's watching, as everyone should.
Yes.
Today, we have an amazing guest. Her name is Kim Hopkins. She is a collaborative and proactive solutions trainer and director of outreach for Dr. Ross Green's nonprofit, Lives in the Balance. And if you don't know Dr. Ross Green, he is the author of The Explosive Child, as well as Raising Young Humans. And it, like, his method is what we really draw from in Calm and Happy Parenting as well. It's just phenomenal.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, the meat that you're going to hear in this episode about the whole philosophy and working with kids is just great. But I don't want to interrupt her bio anymore.
Kim works with parents, educators, and providers to share the research that shows kids with concerning behaviors aren't lacking motivation. They're lacking skills, especially those related to flexibility, adaptability, emotion regulation, frustration tolerance, and problem solving.
And can we get a hallelujah to that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And as a special little treat for this episode, we have something else that came back too, Brie.
Oh, what else came back?
Our No Guilt Mom YouTube channel.
Yay! Oh my gosh. Yes. Did you guys know that we had a YouTube channel? We have
probably
got a pretty...
Probably not.
Well, you know what? Almost 1,000 people do. So in my opinion, that's a lot.
But on our No Guilt Mom YouTube channel, we have a new video for you. And it's always videos that could be used as a family with your kids. And this one is about 3 ways to approach problem solving, which I believe Kim talks about in her interview with us
too. She does.
So it's something you can take immediately and you can go watch with your kids. And then you have this new skill that you can use in your family.
It's fantabulous, people.
So we have tons of goodies for you. Welcome back to the podcast, and let's get on with our interview with Kim.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast, Kim. We're so happy to have you here.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So this is such a passionate topic for me as a former teacher, because I read Dr. Green's book, The Explosive Child. And when I went through it, I'm like, yes, like this is how we should have been talking with students and dealing with problems with students, and also like how parents should be approaching the situation too. So could you give us a really like brief overview of exactly what mistakes are parents making now when they're dealing with discipline problems?
Sure. And, you know, through no fault of our own, right? Because what we're taught to do to be good parents and good educators and good clinical providers is to reward the behaviors we like and punish and consequence the behaviors we don't like, to teach our kids right from wrong and to let them know this is what we like, this is what we don't like, right? What that misses is that, you know, pretty quickly kids pick up right from wrong. You know, when my son was 18 months, he knew he shouldn't throw a train across the library and scream at his sister. He already knew that because I had already told him, right? Yet it happened anyway, right? And so what we are taught to do is, well, maybe we need bigger rewards and more painful consequences. Like that's the message, right? And it misses the boat. And the boat it's missing is that this is not intentional behavior to upset anyone. This is the best thing the kid can think to do in the moment, given their current skill set. And so what we need to be thinking about is, well, my child would do well if he could. Not if he wants to, because that's what everybody tells us. Like, your kid will do well if he wanted to. And if they don't want to, you got to make them want to, right? No. They would do well if they could. When they're not doing well, we need to think what is getting in their way. And we need to fully believe they'd like to do well based on the fact that they're human, right? And we all pretty much do the best we can in the situations we find ourselves in. That's true of our children too.
I think that's such an important point, that kids would do well if they could, and something that we miss a lot as adults.
Mm-hmm. And if they're not doing well, something's getting in the way. And what the research tells us, that something, lagging skills that lead to unsolved problems or unmet expectations. But it all starts with the skills. They're lacking skills, not lacking motivation.
So I love that. And as someone that coming from early childhood, that's a real uphill climb, you know, when you're dealing with kiddos that are in a, that are young, under the age of five, still working on communication skills, still working on social skills, still working on motor skills, right? And then they're in a large setting with like 10 to 20 kids, depending upon the preschool classroom. And it's hard for teachers to be able to take that moment, take that step back, and be able to focus in on what's happening with the child. So I'm going to ask you, can we dissect that situation where you have a kiddo that is under five and that is upset and chucking a train across the room? Mm-hmm. What are some things that that child might be lacking in that scenario?
Well, and we'll, I'll talk about that scenario in the heat of the moment in a second. But what I want to impress is that the heat of the moment is not the best time to be solving problems with kids and teaching skills, right?
100%.
What we want to do, we call this an upstream model. Prevent the heat of the moment. Prevent kids from falling in the water and doing their behavior signal, whatever it might be. That's our goal. Even with the young ones, right? Now, yes, I did find myself, the true story, in the library. My son was just about 18 months old. He's playing with the train table. My daughter's quite a bit older, about 5.5 years older. She has not shown interest in that train table for 2 years, right? At this point, this is all pre-COVID when we could play with the trains, right? So he's playing and I'm watching him for a distance, right? You know, she comes over and she picks up a train. Now, mind you, there's 40 trains. He's probably playing with five. She picks up one that he just put down, which I happen to notice. So I have that information, right? He then, because it's the best he could do in the moment, screams, throws it And then now, of course, he's on the floor kicking and screaming, right?
Of course.
And I'm watching other parents watch me do this, which is super fun. No, it's not. So
all the judging glares.
Oh, yeah. And what we're taught as parents is what we should do is, honey, you need to quiet down. This is the library. If you can't be quiet and play safely, you can't be here, right? That's going to escalate him, most likely. What I really want to do is go, whoa, this is not how he wanted his day to go, right? Something got in his way. What got in his way? Well, I know at 18 months, he doesn't have a ton of language yet, right? And the ability to express thoughts, needs, and concerns in words is a high-level problem-solving skill that many kids that exhibit concerning behavior don't have. That's just one of the skills the research
tells us.
Can
we address that really quickly? Like, because sure. The thing that most parents say is use your words. And it's just not possible during that time.
Right. That's one solution to that problem. And it might not fit that kid. It might not fit their age or their ability, right? Even with older kids, I hear that and they're like, what words? You know, I've worked with 9, 10, 12-year-olds that didn't have the words to insert themselves in a game at recess that was already playing. So they'd end up hurting other kids when all they wanted to do was play, but they didn't know, they didn't have the words, right?
Well, so, I'm gonna say on that too, even as an adult, there are situations where I just sit there and I'm like, I don't have the words.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm really upset. Mm-hmm. I just can't figure out how to form the words. And I'm an adult. Yeah. I'm 42. Mm-hmm.
You can't expect an 18-month-old to do it.
Yeah. And for all of us, whenever we land in the water, and we all land in the water, right? You know, we might be tired or not feeling well or have some bad news happen. We are not at our best. And if we are upset, I like to say, when I'm upset, you can see the IQ points fall out of my ears. Like I just lose rational thought, the ability to think, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, frankly, if you're lacking skills before you turn 18 and become an adult in the eyes of the law, right? It doesn't mean you suddenly are gifted these skills on your 18th birthday, right? So plenty of adults walk around that have lacking skills, including myself, that I didn't know until I found this model. You know, in my late 20s, early 30s. So absolutely. No. So
from the creators of the hit kids podcast, Who Smarted, and Netflix's Brainchild, comes the adventurous world of mysteries about true histories, affectionately known as Math.
Every episode follows Max and Molly. I got to say, love the name Max. That's my puppy dog's name. Who have just recruited into a secret order of problem solvers on an adventure through time packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs. It actually makes learning pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, I listened to this with my son, and it was so fun to listen to. I loved how modern it was with a cool aunt that they really dug, and like they dealt with bullies. My son also enjoyed all the math involved. Like he thought it was really cool.
Well, and I have to say, I love anything that brings learning and fun together for kids. I really, really wish that something like this was around for my teens when they were younger. We would have absolutely devoured this on our car trips. It would have been amazing. It's perfect for kids ages 6 and up, and new episodes drop every Thursday.
So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids. You can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. Hey, all, it is Joanne
and Bree here,
and we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like, it was such a short episode. And all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples, because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes.
And it makes you feel so much better as an adult to know that there's lacking skills, that like, it's not you. There's no shame about it.
Exactly.
It's not a guilt thing. It's just a skill to learn, well, and it's learnable and teachable.
Yeah. And that most people don't have all of them.
Yeah.
Most people don't have all the skills. So we're out there, we're telling you guys right out there right now, if you don't have all the skills, it's okay. Hardly any of us do.
So we're back in the library with your son.
Sorry. Right. No problem. So I'm not going to do that thing, even though people are watching me. So I go in and I say, oh, honey. And I know he doesn't have words, right? So I go, were you not done playing with that train? Now, thankfully, I had the observational data to make that guess. If I hadn't seen it, it would have been harder. I still would have tried, right? But I had that data. And without language, he told me I was right. What did he do? He stopped kicking and he stopped screaming. And then I said, oh, I don't think your sister knew that. Let's tell her. And so I called her over and she's incredibly flexible. So I know that her part in this is going to go okay. And I say, sister, you know, he wasn't done with that train. I know it looked like he was because he put it down, but he put it down to build this piece over here. So if that's the train you want to play with, could he maybe play with it for a couple of minutes and then you play with it? She says, yes. He smiles, takes the train, goes back to playing. And that phrase, couple minutes, still to this day, my kids are now 6 and 11 and a half, is the phrase that is used when there's a sharing issue. Can I have, and then, and you know, when he's upset, he's like antsy and he goes, can I have that in a couple minutes? Right? Yeah. Like, what's it now? But he learned to say it because over and over and over, I gave it to him and I trained that, right? So we don't have the kind of blow-ups we had around sharing because we have this phrase that seems to work for both of them, right? And it might be different for other kids, but that's how we got out of that. So I didn't tell him, you can't throw, you can't yell, you can't. He knows that. Even at 18 months, he knew that. I had to kind of go, wait a minute, something got in his way. Let's figure out what it is. He may or may not be able to give me input on that. And when, as he's gotten more language and now he's 6, now he can give me some really quality input. And it's great because sometimes I guess wrong. So I'd rather not guess if I don't have to, but I have guessing if I need it.
What you said there, it reminds me also of Dr. Harvey Karp's work with the happiest toddler on the block with the toddleries.
Yeah.
With that, like, and you said you guessed right and you saw that like downgrade of emotions in him. And I've used that on my kids. It is so effective when you start with that. And I know that this way that you handled the situation with your son really lines up with the 3 ways that you teach to collaboratively problem solve with your kids. So let's get into those, that 3-step method. So what's like the first thing you do when you have kind of this behavior issue?
Yes. Well, and again, I would rather be doing this when he's not upset. And that's in fact, when we made our best progress was when we picked a time when things were calm. And I was like, hey, you know, and our first step is called the empathy step, although it's a little misleading because empathy is not the key ingredient. Really, it's about gathering information and understanding. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Green says he'd change the name if he didn't think, you know, it would kind of cause mayhem, which at this point probably would. So, but that's the goal here. The goal is the adults kind of going, something got in the way. My goal is to understand how this whole thing chained out, right? And I'm missing information that's in this kid's brain that if they can tell it to me, I'll just be in a better position to help. It still can be done with kids who are not verbal, but if they can give me some clues, that, and we, you know, it doesn't have to be in words. When you try to understand, you can ask questions and sometimes kids can thumbs up, thumbs down, or they might write on their fingers. If you take some guesses, you know, it was difficult for you when, to get along with your sister playing with trains in the library because, and then you could take guesses and they can rate you 5 being your, you know, completely on target, 1 being your way off and everything in the middle, you know, and you can make it a game. Sometimes we have kids draw pictures. We try to get input from them because they have critical information about what happens in their brains. We can observe the behavior, but we're not understanding their cognition and what's gotten in the way happens in the brain, right?
They do. And I think that is such an important point to drive home for parents, because a lot of the times parents go into situations thinking that they know exactly what happened. They're like, oh my gosh, that child is being disrespectful, or that my child is being rude again and not asking others to play with them. When really the child's motivations are completely different. And mm-hmm. when parents take the time to really figure out what's in a child's brain, you're right. You have so much more information on how to help. And in my experience, it's been something completely different than what I thought might have been the problem.
Right. Like there's so many times that we are so confident, and I would say even overly confident, right, as parents, that we know exactly what's wrong with our kid. We know exactly what's triggering them. And I would say a good like half at the time, like we're probably wrong, right? Like in a situation like that with the train, like I don't even think that the first thought to me would have been that my kid wasn't done playing with the train. My first thought would have just been that, oh, he wants all the trains. Or, and how dare his sister yeah. touch any of them.
Or common, right. He needs to learn to share.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not, and yep. we don't do it to be evil or wrong or make our kids' lives hard. Like, right. Like we're trying to do the best we can too. So right, I love that about like trying to find out what that true reason is and being open to the fact that, you know what, you may not know it. Cause another one, I'm going to just jump ahead on this one of like, that's like trying to deal with a teenager. Mm-hmm. Like I've got yeah. a teenager at home yeah. right now. And mm-hmm. I think I know what the problem is 90% of the time. And I would say I'm right. Maybe 30.
We always say, be prepared for surprises. It actually makes me think about this time I was working with a school and a kid on the bus. He was receiving bus slip after bus slip, which is a negative thing. it's a consequence because he kept standing up when the bus was moving. And we all go, oh my gosh, you can't stand when the bus is moving, right? So I said, let's ask him why, right? And so this is proactive. It's ahead of time because I'm not asking him on the bus. I'm asking him outside the bus, right? And I go, you know, what's hard about staying in your seat during the bus ride to school? And he said, well, my hips hurt. And it's a very long bus ride and I need to stretch them. No word of lie, everybody was floored. They and some people didn't know if they wanted to believe him. They called mom and mom said, oh, you know, I'm about to call you. Actually, he's having hip surgery next week. He's going to be out. Yeah.
And he got like all of these bus slips and he was in pain. Yeah.
And he was in danger of losing his ride to school because he didn't have the problem solving skills to say, my hips are sore on this long bus ride. Now, I'm not saying he should stand up when the bus is moving. No, there's a real safety concern we have to address, but we can hold those both together. Mm-hmm. How do we help him not be uncomfortable in such a way that he is not endangering himself and everybody else? Mm-hmm. There is a solution to that.
Exactly. Right?
And so, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. once you have that information, then as an adult, you're able to come in and brainstorm with them. I'm getting ahead of myself though, because I know that's coming because we have step one, the empathy step. And then can you yeah. describe step two?
Sure. So after the empathy step takes the longest, by the way, it's the hardest because kids aren't always like, well, I'm glad you asked. Here's what's happening. right. So often we have to do what we call drill for information and ask questions in different ways. But when we think we understand where the kid's coming from and we sort of summarize what we learned, we say to them, is there anything else that makes this difficult? They say, no, you got it. Then we move on to step two, which by contrast is very quick. This is where we're going to put the adult's concern on the table. So we got the kid's concern or perspective. Now we're going to enter the adult's concern or perspective on the table, usually as a sentence, because typically we're worried about things like safety or not falling behind in school or, you know, health, well-being, not much else, right? So usually it's a sentence like, well, you know, my concern is that I want everyone to be safe while we're playing in the library. That's mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm. And it's
my
easy.
Concern is that I want everyone to be safe on the bus and we don't risk getting in an accident.
And
that's
then
it.
Since you've already empathized with the child and gotten all their concerns, when I use this step, I find that my kids are much more likely to listen to me.
When you're new to this, you might get a kid who says, I don't care about that. And that's usually a signal for, oh, wait, the adult's talking, they're about to win. When this model, it's a win-win, because typically we're taught parents win, kids lose. And that's what they're expecting, right? When we do traditional discipline. So usually I say, well, you don't have to care. It's my concern. It's my worry. We're going to work on a solution that meets your concern and mine. And usually then that backs them down because they're like, oh, you haven't forgotten about what I just said, right? But absolutely. And then with practice, they absolutely are a little more available to hearing the adult's concern.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Lynn, this time of year, parenting can be such a flusterclux.
You've come to the right place. I'm Lynn Lyons, and I've been treating anxious families for over 30 years.
I'm Lynn's sister-in-law and co-host Robin Hudson.
Join us for Flusterclux, a podcast for parents who worry.
Wait, that's everybody.
Yeah, these last few years have felt like one long anxiety attack for so many.
Why do you think parents are always surprised that a podcast about anxiety relates to them, even if no one in their house has an anxiety disorder?
Well, worry is human. Everyone does it. And anxiety shows up when we face uncertainty.
All the parenting tips you've taught me have been essential.
I love to break it down into skills we need to manage worry in our families.
We've covered so many topics. Depression, burnout, meltdowns, perfectionism.
Don't forget scary mothers-in-law.
Right, but of course that's not my mother-in-law.
Because that's my mother.
And a listener.
As a psychotherapist, I like to teach parents and kids how to respond to everyday moments in healthy ways.
Managing anxiety really can be taught.
It really can. And I'll even tell you what to say.
We talk about serious stuff, but without being too serious.
Anxiety wants everything serious. Anxiety doesn't stand a chance when we're laughing, even about the tough stuff.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because a lot of times as parents, when we're trying to voice our opinion or our concern, sometimes we get a little emotional and we might, with that statement, throw in that little jab too, you know, like, my concern is that you're just going to fail your science project like you always do, or like, or you're not going to get your homework done like you always don't. That doesn't, like, that little jab is kind of what ends up making them come back. And then it just starts that whole, you know, tit for tat, that argument back and forth. Right. And then that's what a lot of times can discourage us as parents of, oh, this process doesn't work.
Yeah.
When really
it's like that little jab has been putting in there.
But that's also why, like you said, it's great to have this part when you're not emotionally charged, when there's not something setting you off.
Yeah, that's 100% the best time. If you as the parent are in the water because you're upset, you're not going to be able to be helpful. Table the discussion. It's not going anywhere. Table it, right? Yeah. It needs to be a good time for both of you, because you need to remain neutral and non-judgmental. And that is much easier said than done, isn't it?
It is much easier said than done, because, oh my gosh, I don't know about you guys, but my emotions like stay around for a while. I get hot-headed so easily, and it takes me a long, long time to cool down.
But, well, and I think if there's anybody that really gets your emotions going, it's your family, your loved ones, especially your kids. Because your kids are, like you just said, they learn things at a very young age. They know exactly how to poke and prod, and how also to perhaps maybe guilt you into something. But that's also because you're not, they don't feel like they can have these conversations with you. When you're able to have these conversations, I think that kind of behavior really, really dwindles down a lot.
Yeah. In other words, they're getting their needs met maladaptively, whether that's the best thing they can think to do, or whether that's how they've learned to deal with traditional disciplines, workarounds, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So you mentioned an interesting thing, because I know that when some parents start using this, their kids don't really open up at first, because that they're not used to an adult being concerned.
They're like, what's your trick?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? What's your angle here?
Yeah. It's a super transparent model. I'm often saying, tell your child that you know you've been, and use words they'd understand, but essentially the message being, you know, you've been doing things the traditional way, and things you thought were helpful were actually making things worse, and you didn't want that, but you didn't know what else to do. And so similarly, if you're super committed to this model, and you slip up and do it the old way, and I've been doing this model 19 years, I've been a parent for 11, sometimes I slip up and I do it the old way, because I also get heated, right?
Yes.
And so,
which is normal. It's normal.
Right. But because this has happened and I have made the correction out loud to my daughter, she'll say to me, "Mom, you know, this is the thing that doesn't help me. It makes it worse." And I go, Oh, right. We need a few minutes.
Right? I love it when they can call you out like that. That's like the biggest thing that you're getting through.
Right.
Yeah.
It's way better than having them scream and yell at you or throw a train at you, you know?
Yeah. And it's totally fine to say, you know what? I make mistakes.
Exactly.
It's actually incredibly respectful to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's more real.
Yeah. And so you have the empathy step, which is step one, define adult concerns. What is the final step in this whole parenting model?
So after you just do that one sentence to define your concern, now you're going to put it all together in the third and final step, which is called the invitation step, where you're inviting the kid to consider solutions that meet both sets of concerns, theirs and yours, right? So, you know, there's a lot of repetition in the model, but you want to repeat again what the kid said was their concerns and repeat again what you just said was your concerns, because you're sort of lining up. I call it like a math equation. This is what we're trying to solve, you know, and you sort of start it with, "I wonder if there's a way. I wonder if there's a way where we can help you when your sister wants to play with the same toy that you want to play with, in such a way that everybody's staying safe and having a good time. Do you have any ideas?" And kids get first crack at it, even young ones, even if you're not expecting them to say anything, just float that out, right? But your partners, the solution does not rest on the child, it rests on the partnership. So if you have a child, even an older kid, it is a high level thinking skill to be able to consider multiple solutions to a problem. And some kids will look at you with a blank face because they can't do it, right? So good thing they have you. And they will learn to do that over time, not their fifth time of engaging in problem solving, but maybe their 25th time. They'll start to understand how you consider multiple solutions to a problem. And a whole host of other skills get taught in this three-step process without you even having to think about it, which is the really neat thing. And then we see what solutions we might have. Now, a lot of people worry that just because their kid offers a solution, they have to take it. No, a good solution meets the kid's concern and the adult's. So if they suggest something that only meets their concern, I would say, well, that's an idea. The thing about that is it doesn't do anything to meet my concern about keeping everybody safe. Let's keep thinking.
I love that wording because I use this process with my kids. And sometimes they're like, if it's about eating nutritiously at dinner or something, their thing is, well, you should just let me eat ice cream. And my thing as an adult is like, no, but I love your wording about that's interesting, but it doesn't meet my concern. I'm going to use that from now on.
Well, and you know, what's funny, a lot of kids are well-versed in traditional discipline. So they will suggest things that work for the adult, but not for them.
And
you know, that's not going to work. Don't fall for it. Like if they say, oh, I'll just try harder. I'll just write. I would say, well, the thing about that is it meets my concern, but not yours. So let's keep thinking. I really do want to help you with what you said is hard about this. Right. And what a message. Right. And so, and then it ends with an agreement to try the solution that we've decided has a shot of working. There isn't a guarantee, right? But that it has a shot of working. It meets both sets of concerns. We think it's probably doable. So let's try it. And then we'll connect again and see how it's going. You know, if it's not working, we'll gather information about why it's not working and we'll tweak it together. If it is working, we're going to celebrate and then we're going to pick the next problem to solve. And the key is you're probably only working on one or two problems at a time, separate conversations for each problem. Even when you're good at the model, maybe three is the max, but you know, some kids have so many unsolved problems on their plate. You really do only want to work on one or two at a time. Because then you can devote the effort to getting those solved. And then you look at the plate and you take another one off, you know? And we have a way to help people kind of sort that out. It's called the assessment of lagging skills and unsolved problems. So you can really start to understand all the skills your kid lacks and all the times that plays out, all the unsolved problems. And then you can make a plan of what you're going to prioritize to work on first, second, third, and all of that. And I should mention the whole model. Yeah, the whole model is free. All the downloadables, we got tons of video. It's all free on our website, livesinthebalance.org. There's a lot of great stuff on there, including things about our advocacy efforts, advocating on behalf of kids and their caregivers, parents, educators, clinicians, all of them, right? But you can find the whole model there, video, audio downloadable stuff. Check it out. And and follow us on Facebook if you're on there. We got a bunch of Facebook groups too that are really, really popular. And it's a great place to not feel alone.
That's great.
That's amazing. So we'll include links to all of that in the show notes. And thank you so much, Kim, for joining us today and going through the model. I know that it's a model I use myself. It's a model that Bree uses. It's one we teach to our community as well, based on Dr. Green's work and Lives in the Balance. So thank you so much for your work and for being here.
Well, thanks for what you guys do. Happy to be here. Thank you.
That was such a great interview with Kim. I think both of us left that interview, Bree, where we're like, oh my gosh, yes, and yes, and yes, and
oh,
yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Everything that she had to say was, it's everything that we've ever talked about. And like, it's integrated into our commonly parenting. It's part of our core parenting beliefs.
It is. The whole thought process of really figuring out what our kids are trying to get out of the situation and what they're feeling is so opposite from what we've been taught as parents. We've been taught that parents know the answers and that they have to like shape these kids and they should employ consequences and make kids responsible for their behavior. But never once in that whole like rhetoric about that have our parents ever been told that, hey, you should really talk to your kids and see what's going on?
Well, and I think it kind of comes back to that thought process of, do you believe that your child is genuinely trying to misbehave?
Yes. I think a lot of people think the kids are manipulating us.
Oh, yeah. Like, seriously, again, going back to my days of working with parents, and I worked especially in the 0 to 5 or 0 to 3, actually. And I can't tell you how many parents I would walk in and they would be saying that their 18-month-old is purposefully breaking things and hitting buttons on the TV just to make them mad. And I'm all like, that's not really their motivation. That's great. You think your kid's that smart. He don't have that kind of thought process yet.
Yeah.
And so I think that just kind of leads into the whole, like, when you have your toddler or your preschooler who's not listening, or your school-aged child who's refusing to do their homework, they're not doing it just to buck the system. Yeah. 99% of the time. I'm not saying like for every once in a while there might be that sliver, but no child is doing that all the time.
Well, even high schoolers. Yeah. Too, because I have a friend who's a high school teacher, and I posted this one thing on Instagram saying like, you know, our kids are not manipulating us and we need to find out the real reason behind their behavior. And she messaged me back and she's like, no, like, we have some kids who are manipulating us. And I'm like, but they're probably not. They probably, or they like, they need something. They have a need that's not being met. And so having them on a behavior plan or having them on a reward system will not meet that need. It just kind of tries to stop the behavior they're seeing that's annoying. Like, maybe it's interrupting a class. Maybe it's like, who knows what it is?
Well, you know, and I think it comes back to like, she shared the story in the interview about how the kid that kept standing up on the bus and kept getting in trouble.
Yes.
And he would stand up and he wouldn't sit down when the bus driver told him to. Mm-hmm. Now, could it, in that scenario, as things went on and Kim got involved with it and she called the mom and they talked all together, that's when they found out, also from talking to the child, his hips were in pain and they were in such significant pain. He was getting surgery, but he didn't have the vocabulary or the thought process to go, oh, if I just tell them that I'm in excruciating pain, that could help the situation. Nope. He just kept defying the bus driver and standing up. So again, like, a lot of times it's not about manipulation. And if manipulation is involved, sometimes it's just an inappropriate coping mechanism that they've come up with, like you just said, because they weren't getting their needs met. So they figured out a way to get that attention or to get that need filled otherwise.
But I always hear this and I think of all of the kids like I've taught, and I got heated. Like, once we stopped the interview, we talked with Kim some more, and I got heated about the pressure being put on teachers for kids' behavior in the classroom.
Because they aren't taught,
teachers,
right?
Aren't taught this. Like, if I knew this as a teacher, I would have approached my classroom in a very different way than I did. Because what you're taught as a teacher is, like, you need a reward system in place. And you need to, like, make sure every child is seen and heard. However, they never tell you how to do that. They just kind of, like, make you feel ashamed that you're not.
Well, it works for a group of, like, 5.
Yeah,
but then they put you in. But then they put you in there with 30 or more. Yes, so, but the big thing that we found was amazing was that the 3 steps that they talk about at the end about like empathy and concern and invitation, Those are all really big components of something that we know.
That is in Calm and Happy Parenting. That's yes. like our APP in the middle of happy.
You done with APP? Yeah, you know me.
So okay, if you loved this episode and you are looking at how you can really use it with your kids, if you're not sure where to start, come and join us in Calm and Happy Parenting. We have a wait list. You can go there and we'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah. So if you love this interview with Kim, you really got to check out Calm and Happy Parenting.
Yeah. So remember, the best mom's a happy mom. Take care of you. And we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.